Vision 2020 UK.
Welcome to this edition of the Vision 2020 UK podcast. In this edition of the podcast, presented by me, John Wellsman, we speak to
Carrie McEwen, consultant ophthalmologist at Nine Wells Hospital in Dundee and president of the Royal College of Ophthalmologists.
And start by asking Carrie to tell us something about herself.
I have been an ophthalmologist for more years now than I care to remember, but I have been a consultant at Nine Wells for more than 25 years, and my a number of interests there, including obviously clinical care, but also education and training of the next generation of ophthalmologists.
So what is an ophthalmologist?
An ophthalmologist is a medically qualified specialist. We take about 15 years of training to become a consultant ophthalmologist, and our job is to look after patients who have eye diseases and visual loss in the plan that we will treat them, both medically and surgically, to retain or regain their vision.
So what is the range of work day-to-day that ophthalmologists do?
Ophthalmologists are both physicians and surgeons, which is reasonably unusual for medical specialists these days. They've often divided into one or the other. We will carry out surgery, carry out cataract operations. Most people are very familiar with that. That's the commonest operation carried out in the UK and worldwide. We will replace corneas, repair retinas, carry out glaucoma operations, improve double vision. We're very busy in theatre, carrying about 5% of all surgery in the United Kingdom. But we also see and treat patients with injections, drugs that we inject often into the eye. We give laser treatment, and we see a lot of patients in the outpatient department. The ophthalmologists will see nearly 10% of every patient of the patients that walk into a general hospital. So it's a very busy specialty, and it deals with and hopefully treats and helps a significant number of the population every year.
How complex is ophthalmology in comparison with some of the other major medical specialisms?
It's a very highly specialised area, in that it takes this curriculum, the basic curriculum in medical specialties vary from 3 years to 8 years. It takes 7 years to become an ophthalmologist in that higher specialist curriculum. So we are kind of pretty well up there with the complexities. We need to deal with not just the eyes, we need to deal with the brain, we need to deal with all the general conditions that affect a person. There is not one medical condition, I think, that anybody can think of that doesn't affect the eyes in one way or another. And we deal with children, we deal with working adults, and we deal with retired people, men and women. So we have a very broad group of people that we try to deal with.
How complex is ophthalmology in comparison with some of the other major medical specialisms?
It's a very highly specialised area, in that it takes this curriculum, the basic curriculum in medical specialties vary from 3 years to 8 years. It takes 7 years to become an ophthalmologist in that higher specialist curriculum. So we are kind of pretty well up there with the complexities. We need to deal with not just the eyes, we need to deal with the brain, we need to deal with all the general conditions that affect a person. There is not one medical condition, I think, that anybody can think of that doesn't affect the eyes in one way or another. And we deal with children, we deal with working adults, and we deal with retired people, men and women. So we have a very broad group of people that we try to deal with.
So Carrie, what is the role of the Royal College of Ophthalmologists?
The Royal College of Ophthalmologists exists effectively to maintain standards for patients with ophthalmic conditions. And it does that largely by training the next generation of ophthalmologists. So we have a training curriculum and we have a training programme. We educate not just the next generation of ophthalmologists, but we educate all ophthalmologists, and we have an education programme, a seminar programme, and a congress. We deal with professional standards. That means that we develop guidelines both for individual conditions and for commissioning service work. So over and all, we are a membership organisation that is responsible for making sure that we have patients are protected against the other things that might try and drive our service, which may be either political or maybe business-led. So we're an independent organisation to try to maintain these good independent standards.
So as a self-governing body, how does the College stand up to assessment of its standards from the outside world?
That's a very reasonable question, and we use a very heavy evidence base, so that and we have to grade the evidence that we use when we're looking at setting standards. But we don't work in isolation. Nobody does these days. We work with NICE. Some of our guidance is NICE accredited, and that's a very, very high level. We work with Health Education England. We work with the GMC. We work with other medical royal colleges. So overall, we are providing evidence, and we're providing training that fulfills other standards other than simply our own.
So Carrie, how did you become president of the Royal College of Ophthalmologists, and what does your role entail?
I was elected by the entire membership to become the president of the Royal College of Ophthalmologists. That is generally how presidents are elected these days. Sometimes there are other mechanisms, but we like to make sure that the entire membership is included. What does the president do? Well, the president is involved with making sure that the college remains on track, working with the staff and working with the council and the college officers. So we have a very clear programme that we have to deliver around about training, education, assessment and examinations. But we also have to make sure that we continue to live within the real world, which is constantly changing in health terms, and have to make sure that that is up to date and that everybody is getting the benefit from the Royal College that is required. And that means the membership, but it also means the patients and the public.
So can you give us some idea of one of the hot topics the college is working on presently?
The college looks at a variety of different things, and there's also always various different things that are underlying. The college has been doing a large piece of work around patients who have been lost to follow-up within the eye health care system. Because of the huge demand on ophthalmology services, some patients have not been able to get appointments on time, and we have been working with all our members to identify where this is happening and how we can find a way of safely making sure that they don't get lost within the eye healthcare system. And if they need an appointment within 4 weeks, they get an appointment within 4 weeks. If they need one within 6 months, they get it within 6 months, and they don't get lost for several weeks or several months without getting an appointment. We have been working with various different providers of health to make sure that they have a database that covers that, but largely we're trying to work nationally to make sure that this is something that is recognised, so that when a patient leaves the hospital, it's very clear when they're due to come back, and if they don't come back on time, that there's an alert set in place to make sure that that is recognised and they either get an urgent appointment or somebody manages to follow that up.
Some people in the vision impairment sector feel there's a disconnect between the point of diagnosis of a sight condition and the practical sight-related support that someone will receive. What's your view on this?
I think it's a very important area. Fortunately, we have extremely good treatments, and fewer people are being registered than did in the past. We've got very good treatments that people, for instance, with age-related macular degeneration would undoubtedly have been registered in the past, but now with treatments they are not being registered. So there's a lot of effort going into preserving vision, but those conditions that we can't treat or have come to the end of the treatment line, we need to make sure that people are well prepared. And it's uncommon for people to lose vision as suddenly. It's commonly a gradual process, so we need to make sure that people are prepared during that stage. The disconnect between certification and which is when somebody is recognised by a medical professional, an ophthalmologist, to that their vision has failed beyond a certain level, and registration, which is the process whereby the social services come in. That has just undergone a new process. There's a new certification of visual impairment process that has changed in all four home nations in the United Kingdom, and we're hoping that will not only change to some degree how things are done, but we'll refresh the process and make sure that people are much more up to date with what's going on. So we're hoping that that will bring this to the highlight, the attention of people with reduced vision.
So do you think that some eye health professionals understand the importance of being registered as sight impaired, but some don't?
I think that is probably becoming less than it was. I think there was an element of that potentially that took place, but as clinics become more specialised, the people who are likely to have a condition that may end up with loss of vision are much more likely to attend clinics that will fulfil that role and have people in place to try and help make sure that the certification takes place. My own special interest is mainly people with double vision, and I very rarely register somebody as visually impaired, because although they have a visual problem, it's unlikely to lead to that. And similarly, people who deal with patients who have got eyelid problems or difficulties in that area are less likely to register. So the clinics, with the macular degeneration clinics, the diabetic clinics, the glaucoma clinics, I think are now becoming much more, they realise the relevance of visual impairment much more.
Do you think that ophthalmologists understand the day-to-day issues faced by people with sight loss?
I think that's more difficult. It's largely to do with our training and the role that we have. Our role is largely, as we've already mentioned, to regain and retain vision and optimise what vision there is. And I think that is difficult when that's the line that you deal with and not trained necessarily in problems of loss of vision. But that said, I think that ophthalmologists do recognise that it may not be their strongest suit, and that by working with people who are trained in habilitation and support is very, very important, both for patients but also for us as professionals to recognise that patients are getting the best care that they can possibly have.
So do you think there is room for ophthalmologists to learn more about how they can support people with sight loss in their eye clinics?
I think we can always learn. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I think that when we see particularly junior ophthalmologists, recognising the way that the clinic room's set up, recognising the way that they either can support somebody mobility-wise coming into the room or not, because not everybody wants that. I think these are things that we all do need to learn. And I think experienced ophthalmologists do learn that through experience, because we do say we don't deal with many people with visual impairment, but we do deal with enough to recognise what they need.
I wonder then, does the eye clinic liaison officer role fulfil some of that gap?
Yes, I think that's right. It depends where you work in the country. ECLOs or visual support workers, in a more sort of general term, have been an invaluable asset to the clinics that they're needed in. Obviously, they're not required in some of the clinics, but those where there's a high level of patients with reduced vision or reduced risk of losing vision, then the time that's spent with an ECLO who is trained and is knowledgeable and can provide very practical support for patients is really so important, because ophthalmology clinics, I don't know if you've ever been to one.
Yes.
Recently, but they are absolutely mobbed with people. They are so busy, and it makes it a very uncomfortable situation where there's a lot of people waiting to see the doctor. The doctor realises they want to spend time with somebody who's had bad news. It's excellent to be able to say that we've got really expert advice here to give to you through another individual.
So how do you think the role and the importance of ECLOs can be promoted in eye clinics, especially in eye clinics where they don't have one?
The college is doing a lot of work looking at how to optimise ophthalmology time to make sure that we make good use of the ophthalmic team. And not every patient needs to see an ophthalmologist for everything. An ophthalmologist is a very highly trained person who should be making high-level decisions, carrying out complex surgery, but not necessarily doing some of the other bits and pieces that other people actually have better training for. So I think we can emphasise that quite clearly. And I think that it is important that the ECLOs are in the correct clinics. I think that what we don't want is an ECLO to be in a clinic where the patients attending are unlikely to be running into difficulty with visual loss.
Carrie, stepping away from your day job, I wonder what are some of the broader issues related to eye health that interest you?
Well, in the entire eye healthcare sector, obviously my main interest is in the secondary care of ophthalmology and said my interest is in neuro-ophthalmology and in double vision. But I'm also interested in this business around about certification and registration. And I've been very involved in the updating of the registration format in all home four nations, particularly in Scotland, but also throughout the whole of the United Kingdom, to make sure that the approach, while not entirely identical, is consistent across the four home nations so that people will get the care that they require.
Why are people with sight loss registered with a local authority, whereas other disabled groups are not?
Yes, it's a very interesting question. We've discussed this on a number of occasions. There's no deaf registration, for instance. It began a long time ago, in 1948, with the Assistance Act. It indicated that local authorities had to keep a register of people who had specific disabilities, of which vision impairment was one of them. And it doesn't seem to have been that disability register has necessarily been maintained for other disabilities, but it certainly has for eye care. The first advantage is very much for the individual to make sure that they get access to the appropriate support. And it may not even just be access to it, it's actually being identified as somebody who's got a visual impairment. That can be very, very useful for people to have, not just for support, but also in their day-to-day life, for people who are working, for people who need to take transport, and so on and so forth. But the other thing that's useful about certification and registration is it's a mechanism of gathering data so that we can look at service provision for the future, we can look at epidemiological data, and then it makes it easier to plan and find out what's happening.
Carrie, what do you see as the challenges and barriers for people with sight loss in relation to their eye health?
I think these are very varied, and at the moment we realise that people who have eye healthcare problems and loss of vision are mainly older people, because the diseases such as glaucoma, age-related macular degeneration, and diabetic retinopathy are commonly affecting older people. And by being visually impaired, that has an effect on the whole individual, it has an effect on the family, and it means that people are more likely to be isolated in that they don't have the same ability to get out and about, which may lead to loneliness and sometimes even depression. It means people are more likely to fall over and therefore may require hospitalisation, and it also means that people may have difficulty just being a part of the normal life that they had before, and may in fact require care. But there are other individuals that we do forget about, and I think particularly children. Mm. Children with visual impairment, they need education as well as developmental needs, along with the other social and support that they get. And there's a whole family that may be quite young that needs support there. And that even becomes more of an issue, I think, to some extent, in the transition between childhood and adulthood, where there is very little in place to help there. And the other group that we forget about commonly is the working age group. It's always reported that people with visual impairment don't have the same amount of ability to gain employment as sighted people. And that is something that is a huge problem, because the health overall of an individual is dependent on their ability to be out and be in gainful employment.
So, Carrie, if you had a magic wand and can influence government, the health service and society, what change would you like to bring about for people with sight loss?
I think that the general external structure, such as what's described as street furniture, needs to be looked at very carefully, along with mechanisms of transport as well. We've adapted very well for wheelchair users, a lot of areas where people can go up and down without curbs. I think that now you should look more generally at the visually impaired members of society as well, because there's a huge number of things that could be changed around about that, just walking down a street. I think within the health sector, our main drive is to reduce the amount of visual impairment that there is, and that's a real drive, and that means that we've got to be very, very careful to push towards government that eye health is by not having sufficient capacity, by having patients waiting longer than they need for eye health treatment, that they are like they may well lose their vision. We did a study quite recently which identifies that about 20 people per month in the United Kingdom can lose vision because they're not being given an appointment at the appropriate time. So that's a huge push. And the biggest thing is to prevent people losing vision under any circumstances that we possibly can.
So putting aside for a second some of the more radical developments in the restoration of people's eyesight, what are some of the significant developments in the treatment of eye health which are actually having an impact on people with sight loss?
Well, ophthalmology, as you probably know, has been a very revolutionary specialty. It uses lasers, which are pretty science fiction still for some areas. there's been an enormous revolution in some of the treatments that have prevented people losing vision that even a decade ago would have lost vision. And that's largely treatment for macular degeneration. And that is because of the ageing population. The population, by the sounds of it, is not going to get much younger, and treatment for the more common dry age-related macular degeneration is something that is probably going to be landing on our doorsteps and will be something that will make a difference again to another large proportion of the population. It may be an injection treatment like the treatment for age-related macular degeneration of the wet variety, or it would be ideal if we could move away from injections, and that's something that people are working on because that involves a lot of time and effort for patients and a lot of manpower for the health service. So if we could deliver these treatments in an easier, longer lasting form, then that is something that will make a big difference.
So one final naive question, if I may, Carrie. What is the difference between an ophthalmologist and an optometrist?
An ophthalmologist is a medically qualified specialist who carries out surgery and looks after patients with eye diseases and loss of vision. An optometrist is trained to provide spectacles and contact lenses, but they're also able to examine an eye and detect some of the abnormalities, but generally they will refer these up to the hospital if they find that there is a disease or a reduction of vision.
Carrie McEwen, President of the Royal College of Ophthalmologists, many thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Vision 2020 UK.
For more information about this podcast, Vision 2020 UK and its members, get in touch via email
info@vision2020uk.org.uk,
on Twitter
@Vision2020UK,
or via our website
www.vision2020uk.org.uk.
Produced by me, John Wellsman, at Sparrow's Rest.